Hi, you've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10, select styles only.
Don't kill my fuzzy vibe. Hashtag avec class.
You are locked on Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and as always you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. We are back with another season preview podcast. But before we get into that, just a quick note that Basketball Monster is now open for memberships for the 2017-18 season. So if you want to see all my projections and the articles that we're rolling out over there, obviously team analysis, trade analysis, draft tracker, all that is now up at Basketball Monster. And when you go and sign up for your membership, there is a section that will say like referral code or promo code. And in that section, if you just write my name, Josh, it helps to track where the users are coming from. So it's not a discount code, but if you just add my name in there, it just helps us track where the users are coming from. So Basketball Monster is now open. So go and check that out. But back to what we're actually doing in today's show. And we are doing another season preview podcast. And today's podcast, we're going to be talking about the Toronto Raptors. So to talk about everything that is Toronto Raptors related, I'm joined by the host of the Locked On Raptors podcast, and that is Sean Woodley. Sean, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Josh. Happy to be on.
It's good to have you on. It's also good to have on the only other member of the Locked On Podcast Network who understands Celsius, kilometers, centimeters, kilograms. I can speak in my native measurement language with you, and often like I can put out a tweet about weather, and people won't know what I'm talking about. But you'll often respond, and we'll be able to understand what 35 degrees is, and it's not freezing because that's really really hot. But that's just the way it is.
We're on the right side of history, Josh. Eventually, we'll see the light, I'm sure.
At some stage. But you know, at this point, I'm not holding out hope that the metric system takes hold in the United States. But at least we can go back and forth and understand what a centimeter actually is. But we're not going to be talking measurements for this whole podcast. We're going to be talking measurements in some degree, but basketball production measurements, I guess, as we look at the Toronto Raptors. So what we do in all these shows is have a look at the teams, who's joined the team and how that affects what happens, and then some general questions surrounding that squad as we head into the season. So, Sean, this Toronto Raptors team did undergo some changes, and when you look at the additions and departures for this team, it does appear that they may, on the surface, have gotten worse. The only real, I guess, impact player that was added to this team is CJ Miles. Now, CJ Miles played for the Pacers last season. How do you see him coming to the Raptors? Do you think that he has got the leg up as the starting small forward? Because that's a question that many fantasy people are going to want to know the answer to. And how does he fit in with the remaining talent that is in Toronto?
Well, I think he's a perfect fit regardless of where he plays. I mean, the Raptors have always kind of been a shooting star team, and they were, especially last season, we saw in the playoffs how just desperate they were for anybody to hit an open shot after the defense forced the ball away from DeMar DeRozan or Kyle Lowry. And I think Miles is going to do that. I'm really curious as to what's going to happen at the starting small forward spot. I think that's easily the most compelling and interesting question for the Raptors heading into the season. And it's down to Norman Powell or CJ Miles. I think sort of the consensus among the fan base, and this is a fan base, keep in mind, that for 2 years has been clamoring for more Norman Powell. I've seen you. I've also kind of been in that boat as well. Norman Powell's awesome. And I think the consensus is that people want to see Powell start. And I'm still kind of torn, but I've gone back and forth on this like 3 or 4 times since the Miles move happened. Right now, in sort of where my pendulum sits, I think I'm on the side of Norm. I'd like to see Norm start. And I, honestly, there's been no sort of word out of the Raptors as to whether or not Miles is going to start or not. I think I'd like to see Powell start, though, because that's kind of where he's been at his best. We saw last season when, you know, he would fill in as a starter for Damari Carroll when he was sidelined, or DeMar DeRozan when he missed some games. He was always better as a starter than he was as sort of a go-to guy off the bench. And especially after Terrence Ross was traded midseason at the deadline, like Powell became sort of the go-to six man, and he kind of struggled in that role. He was just kind of inconsistent. He doesn't really have a refined game enough to really handle an offense by himself and be sort of the go-to guy. But when he's the fifth guy in the lineup and he's just hitting catch and shoot threes, and we saw this in the playoffs as well after the Raptors made the starting lineup change, Powell fits in really nicely. He's really nice to have as a third guy who can, you know, make a play off the dribble when Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan run into trouble, or you just want to give those guys a play off. And Powell can get to the basket pretty much at will. I don't know if there's anyone I've seen in the NBA who can hang with his first step. I'm curious to see, like, I wish there was a measurement to sort of gauge who has the best first step in the NBA, because I think Powell will be right up there. But after he does that, you know, he runs into some issues. And when he's in a lineup where he's not being asked to go to the basket and sort of be the go-to guy at all times, he's so much more effective. So I think that's kind of where I'm at right now. I want to see him start. His numbers last year when he started were really nice too. I think he averaged about 15 points a game, shot right around 40% from three when he was a starter, and those numbers kind of dropped off when he came off the bench. I think I'd like to see Powell end up being a starter, but that could change by the time the season comes around, because I flip-flop this, as I mentioned a few times already.
I was advocating for him to become the starter last year over Damari Carroll at the start of the season. I thought this is the better option for this team. Obviously, that's not the way that they went, and I'm a big Powell fan. As for this season, I don't know whether he starts either. Obviously, I'm in a similar boat to you, but it doesn't really bother me if he doesn't in terms of overall minutes, because I still think that he should play more minutes than Miles. But as you said, he did play a lot better when he was paired with Lowry and DeRozan and Valanciunas. Like, in that sort of pairing, he played at a much higher level, and I think that he does have the higher fantasy upside versus CJ Miles. Miles is going to hit more threes. We know that's what he does, but I think Powell can do more in other areas. The other thing is, CJ Miles has been relatively injury prone and inconsistent throughout his career, so you'll get some hot streaks from CJ where he comes out and hits five threes in a game and does that for three games in a row, and then he doesn't hit a shot for the next four games, and that'll happen, you know, quite often with CJ, depending, or not, irrespective of what role he has, whether he's starting or coming off the bench. So Powell's going to have opportunities, and I really like Norm Powell as a last pick in the draft, because as he heads here into his third season, like, we're expecting improvement. We know who CJ Miles is at the moment. Like, he is just who he is, but we don't fully know where Powell's going to go. It is his third season. A lot of players take that step forward in their third or fourth season, so Powell could get actually better than what he has been and really make that position his own. So I would much prefer to take Powell in a draft over Miles. Miles is going to give you the more threes, as I said, but I think that Norm is that guy, and I think that everyone, as you said, Raptors fans, fantasy fans, are rooting for him to get the majority of those minutes at the small forward spot. It's not to say that Miles isn't going to be valuable, but
if I could add one, go ahead. Sorry, no. If I could add one thing on Powell, it's that the 3-point shooting, I worry, like, you know, he's kind of been up and down. His first season, he only had 89 attempts. He shot just over 40%, and that was like a stark difference from his college numbers. Last year, it kind of came back down to earth. He was about 32% on 173 attempts. So we're still kind of in the phase where we're kind of looking to get a big enough sample to determine how good he is. And I worry that, you know, there are times his shot, while it's not like broken or anything like that, there are times where I kind of worry about his mechanics a little bit. So I'm curious if that is going to sort of even out, or if he's just going to kind of cap out as like a 35% 3-point shooter. And the other thing too is the assist numbers. I think if he's going to take a step, like you said, and he's going to make that leap in the third or fourth year, I think the playmaking for him really has to turn around, because, as I mentioned, when he goes to the basket, he's kind of a one-track mind. Like, he's going up and he's going to try to finish with his left hand or dunk on somebody. He doesn't really have much finish with his right, and his left hand is kind of suspect as well. And he's never really looking to make the kickout pass. So I think if he can sort of figure that out, that'll add, you know, statistical value to him for sure as a fantasy piece. But yeah, that is something that I'm really sort of curious and kind of, I'm just not all that hopeful for it, because, you know, I think as a guy who played four years in college and he's 24 now, I'm worried that we might be getting to the end of his sort of development. So I'm not sure if he's going to be able to add that stuff. But as is, I think you're right too in your assessment that he's just a better, more higher upside play than CJ Miles for sure.
the rest of the additions that the Raptors made, they're not going to be getting too many people excited. It reminds me very much of the way the Washington Wizards filled out the rest of their roster last year with guys that, if you had asked 95% of NBA fans, they wouldn't have known that Daniel House or Sheldon McClellan were on NBA rosters. And that's what it feels like the back end of the Raptors roster looks like. They signed Kennedy Meeks. They signed Alphonso McKinney. KJ McDaniels has come in, and Kyle Wilcher, and then Malcolm Miller on a two-way deal, and Lorenzo Brown on a two-way deal. The two-way guys, we don't need to talk too much about those guys. But what about Meeks and McKinney? Just a quick overview on those two guys. And do you expect them to make the roster over KJ McDaniels?
With Meeks, I don't really know much about Meeks. I'm not much of a college basketball watcher, and I didn't get to watch much Summer League this year, so I haven't really seen much of Meeks. The little bits I have, he doesn't really seem like he's going to have a role that he can kind of carve out with the Raptors. The Raptors have so many big men already that I'm not sure Meeks is going to really fit in. So if I had to guess, I would say he doesn't make the team. Alphonso McKinney, he's a guy that the Raptors seem pretty high on. And again, he's kind of a guy that it kind of came out of nowhere. But I do think, because the Raptors kind of need some wing depth right now, especially with OG Anunoby injured and we don't know when he's going to be back, I think McKinney has a shot to make the team and maybe sort of carve out like 10th or 11th man minutes until OG Anunoby comes back at least. And I think McDaniels is kind of in the same competition. I'm not very high on KJ McDaniels. I never really have been. I think him and McKinney are very similar players in that they're super athletic. There's a lot of like sexy potential there, but I'm just not sure there's all that much like on-court NBA utility and usefulness. So I kind of agree with you that I don't think any of these guys are really going to factor in at all. And if there's anyone on the end of the bench that's going to factor in, I mean, I think Bruno Caboclo is just as likely to really have a major impact as either of these guys. And yeah, Bruno, he just got kicked off the Brazilian national team for pouting. So maybe that's not the highest praise to bump him in with McKinney and McDaniels. But I think this team is really going to sort of invest a lot in having their guys like, you know, DeLon Wright and Norm Powell, I think, is going to play a ton. And I think eventually OG is going to get some very regular run in the lineup. I think they're really going to invest in sort of their higher level young guys. And these guys at the back of the bench, I'm not sure that we're really going to see much of them at all.
KJ McDaniels is one of those players that fantasy people love because of his ability to block shots and get steals in that first half a season in Philadelphia. And people are always still hanging on to the hope, oh, maybe KJ, he can find his way into 25 minutes and he's going to be good. But he's just not good. And that's, I thought he was going to be good. I thought, yeah, he's going to be something. He's going to have an opportunity in Philly. And he did have that opportunity. And then he's just been nothing for 2 years. Like, he didn't do much in Brooklyn at the end of last year, even though he started to get some minutes. And yeah, he can put up those stats, which are really interesting as a shooting guard or a small forward, to get a guy that's blocking 1.5 shots, which he can do if he gets enough minutes. But I just don't think he's good enough, and he's not going to be cracking the rotation ahead of Powell or ahead of Miles, even if he does make the roster. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we should be getting too excited there. The guys that left Toronto this season, Sean, PJ Tucker's gone to the Rockets, Damari Carroll traded to the Nets, Corey Joseph to the Pacers, and Patrick Patterson to the Thunder. They are four guys who are considerable rotation pieces, and that's why I say it looks like this team's gotten worse, because you lost four rotation guys, you added one in Miles, and obviously they're banking on internal development from Powell and from Wright, and the young guys like Siakam and Poeltl as well. But on the overall additions versus departures, losing those four guys gives them a considerable hit, especially in the front court where Tucker, Carroll, and Patterson were all playing minutes at the four last season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Carroll, I think we can kind of move on from and not be too worried about it. I think the end of his run in Toronto, he just wasn't, it's not even that he wasn't good, it's just he wasn't really healthy, and like he just kind of seemed broken down. I kind of think he's going to have a bit of a bounce back with the Nets 2 years removed from knee surgery, but I think that remains to be seen. As far as Tucker and Patterson go, yeah, those are enormous losses right now. Just looking at the Raptors roster, I mentioned the biggest question for me was Norm or CJ Miles starting at the three. I think pretty much the second biggest question is who is going to close games at the four? Because I think definitely Ibaka is going to finish games or start games at the four, and Valanciunas is going to hold on to his starting role. But to close games out, Valanciunas has kind of proven he can't really be on the court against most matchups. And I'm curious to see how they're going to replace PJ Tucker at the four, because him and Ibaka were an incredible closing lineup last season. I don't have the numbers on hand, but they were something like a plus, I want to say something like a plus 20 when they were on the floor together as a closing lineup, and that could be totally wrong. But they were fantastic in terms of net rating, and it just kind of worked perfectly because Tucker rebounded really well for his position. And Ibaka was he's an okay rebounder at center. He's not great. He's not terrible. But it just worked really perfectly. They could switch a ton of things. Tucker seemed to love playing in that lineup too. We talked about it all the time. And those two kind of propped up Carroll as well when he was out there with them. So yeah, those are big losses for sure. And the Raptors are going to have to work around it. Maybe they can take advantage of the East being a little sort of wishy-washy with the top two teams kind of needing to work in new guys. And below them just kind of being a wasteland of crap. So I'm curious to see. I think the Raptors are going to start the season off kind of in a different way than they have in the past. I mean, the last couple years, they've really had hot starts. And by the time the new year came around, they were like well out and had a nice cushion, well over 500. Whereas I think this year we might see them kind of stumble a little bit. Not even so much stumble, but just sort of try to get time for these young guys and see what they can do to try to craft a rotation that's going to be effective at the end of the season. And that's where I think guys like Siakam and Poeltl are really going to come in. And I wouldn't be surprised to see one of those guys closing at the four when the season ends and maybe sort of making up for the loss of Tucker or Patterson. But there's no getting around it. Those two are pretty big losses. And I think that's kind of the reason why you see lower win projections. I think Kevin Pelton was about 43.5 wins for the Raptors. Like, that's pretty low for a team that just won 51 games and 56 games the year before. But when you lose that kind of experience, and Patterson was always such a plus-minus monster, partly because he was really good, but partly because he was always playing with Kyle Lowry. When you lose those guys, that's going to hurt your overall projections when you're kind of basing the projections on who's on the roster. And right now, there's a lot of unknown.
Yeah, definitely. And again, you're banking on a lot of internal growth from these guys to keep them sort of buoyant as to where they were before. Mm-hmm. We touched on OG Anunoby already. He was drafted. I think it was a really good selection at that pick. Like, he slid. I would have been happy taking him around 15, around that sort of zone. So they got him in the 20s. That's a really good spot. But of course, he tore his ACL playing for Indiana last January. There was no concrete reports when it happened. Like, we didn't actually know it was an ACL when it happened. That report came out later. But there's no sort of information about when he is going to be ready. But everything I've sort of read and been informed about is they're going to be extremely cautious with Anunoby. And it's likely we don't see him until at least the new year. That would be my guess at this point, unless you've got any other information. And then that will obviously, you know, bring him on slowly and introduce him in a backup role clearly as the season, you know, winds down in that February through to April zone, and he's going to play limited minutes. Do you have any more information on the knees? Are you going to be ready earlier than I'm anticipating, or how do you see that playing out?
Well, from what I've heard, and I don't have like inside sources or anything, but from what I've heard just in the general sort of scuttlebutt is that, like, he's progressing faster than people thought. And I think the Indiana University thing was like very bizarre because they weren't letting anything out at all. And no one, even people who covered the team that I've talked to, didn't have any idea what the injury was and if it was even officially a tear in the ACL. But it sounds like, I mean, at Summer League, he was at least doing physical activity. He was shooting a little bit. And it sounds like he could be potentially ready by like November, December, which I think is a bit, you know, ahead of schedule. And I do think, though, I still don't think we're going to see him till the new year, because I think if he's back, he's going to get, you know, sufficient time in the D League. The Raptors have used their D League team, or the G League, I guess now. They've used Raptors 905, you know, pretty heavily to try to get guys up to speed before bringing them up to the NBA. They did that with Jakob Poeltl at the start of last season. They've done that with Norm Powell in the past as well. Pascal Siakam, too, played pretty much the entire year. It was kind of an inverse for him, actually, because he started the season as the starter for the Raptors and finished just pretty much straight as a G League hand. But they really did rely on that team. It's like a 40-minute drive down the road. That's with traffic. It's like 20 minutes without. But they will shuttle guys back and forth pretty, you know, freely there, and I think they'll have OG down there pretty regularly, getting him most of the run to just sort of get him back up to speed. But I think come January, I mentioned the spot as the power forward, you know, the closing power forward is potentially being open, and if OG can kind of come in and play good defense there and like maybe hit the odd spot up three, I wouldn't be shocked if he kind of grabs that job by the end of the year as well, because it's pretty much up for grabs, and if anyone has the dimensions to fit that job, it's probably OG.
Now, in terms of him fitting that job, he needs to be able to hit his shot. So offense is the real issue here with him. But if he can start hitting the three, then he can do Patrick Patterson-y type of things, because his defense is fantastic. And even from a fantasy point of view, his ability to get defensive stats, so steals and blocks, really does make him an intriguing rookie when he gets healthy and ready to go. So I do like him in rookie drafts, not so much for this year, but for dynasty leagues, because his ability to get the steals and blocks is really good, really strong rebounder. Or, yeah, for his position anyway, for a guy who's going to be small forward eligible, gets the rebounds. But if he adds the threes and is able to keep his field goal percentage at a decent level, which it's not that he's one of those guys who's a terrible shooter, but has a high field goal percentage because he doesn't take those shots. He takes his shots closer to the rim, which is something that's helpful for fantasy, but he needs to be able to expand out to three. And he is a guy that I think will get a little bit undervalued when we're looking at rookies in fantasy, just because he's not going to play the start of this season, but his ability to get those steals and blocks is going to be really interesting. And he could be, when he hits the prime of his career, a guy that's averaging, you know, over 1.5 steals, over 1.5 blocks, which is extraordinarily valuable in a fantasy setting. And even if he only averages 9 points and 6 rebounds, if you're getting 1.5 steals, 1.5 blocks, then you're a useful fantasy guy. And I think that's what Anunoby can become at some point in his career. Now, we've touched on the power forward spot a lot because that's the confusing thing. We had Ibaka there last year, but in essence, Ibaka played mainly at center when he came across, because they'd start that way, and then Valanciunas would see his minutes go from 26 when before Ibaka came to playing like 20 minutes a night for majority of that time, and then would be having Tucker, Carroll, Patterson playing next to Serge. But with those guys no longer there, it is going to be interesting. Now, you've touched on Siakam, touched on Jakob Poeltl as well, you know, potentially filling in that role at the four. I think I'm a little bit higher on Siakam being able to do that next to Ibaka rather than Poeltl, but yeah, you know, Poeltl definitely came on at the end of last season and he clearly overtook Baba Nagera as the backup center. I see a lot of people still thinking that Nagera is going to be the backup center this year. That won't be the case, will it?
No, I don't think there's any chance that Bebe is ahead of Poeltl starting the season. Like, Poeltl supplanted him pretty quickly last year once he started to get regular minutes. And I think it's just because he's a lot more steady. I kind of think Poeltl is going to end up being one of these guys who, like, he may never be that valuable a fantasy player, but he is just going to be, he might be like the best player you don't want on your fantasy team kind of thing, because he's so just fundamentally sound. And that's kind of where I disagree with you. You mentioned that you think Siakam would be better with Ibaka.
Okay.
I'm kind of intrigued by the idea of a Poeltl-Ibaka closing lineup. And, you know, I think in those situations on offense, Ibaka will sort of function as the de facto power forward, with Poeltl, you know, taking up the rim protection duties, whereas not taking up the sort of pick and roll duties. Whereas on defense, I think Ibaka is going to hang around near the rim. And I think Poeltl's fast enough where he can kind of hang with guys on the perimeter if he needs to go guard fours out there. And I think that can kind of work as they sort of inverse depending on the end of the floor they're at. But again, like Poeltl, I believe last season Poeltl was like dead last in the league in terms of passes received per, you know, on a per minute basis.
Oh, that's the,
like,
he that's just, the Bismack Biyombo role.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they just never look for him. He gets most of his buckets off of putbacks and he's really good at it. But he's not really a part of the offense. Maybe that improves or sort of, you know, gets ramped up this season, because he's a really nice passer. Where Bismack Biyombo couldn't pass at all, he could barely catch. Poeltl is a really nice Poeltl's a really nice passer on the roll, and he showed that a few times last year. So maybe he gets more of that, because that's something the Raptors desperately need, is secondary guys to make plays in pick and roll situations. So maybe we see that. Siakam is interesting to me, because in summer league for like 3 games he looked amazing. Then the knockout round game he just completely fell off the map. And then in the summer, Siakam was playing in this league in Toronto called the Crown League, which is pretty much just like Canadian college players who never made the NBA and just some sort of scrap heap guys from around the way. And Siakam kind of got bullied in that a little bit too. So I'm not really sure if Siakam is ready for full-time NBA duty. I think long-term he might be the more exciting prospect than Poeltl, just because he's got that crazy athleticism and he's got a bit of a range to him, which Poeltl just has never shown, or never even shown an interest in, you know, dabbling out to 18 feet. Whereas I think Siakam can do that, and his blocked shots, you know, they came kind of, I think he went like 10 games without a block last year, but then they came kind of fast and furious after that, as he kind of got more comfortable and a little more sort of, you know, happy to take risks. And that's kind of where he got in trouble, was he took a lot of risks and he got in trouble a lot that way, got out of position. And that's kind of where his usefulness came to an end. But yeah, Siakam's interesting. I think Poeltl for this season is going to get way more run than Siakam. But again, that spot at the power forward is so open, especially to close games. And I think CJ Miles is going to close games there too. We haven't really mentioned that.
Yeah, that's true.
It's going to depend on the matchup. But, you know, if they're up against a smaller team, say they're playing Boston, I think CJ Miles is going to be the guy that's out there. He played some four with Indiana back when Paul George didn't want to play four. And, like, while he's not a great rebounder for that spot or a great defender, really, I think he can do it, and I think the spacing that he'll provide, I think like a lineup of Lowry, Powell, DeRozan, and Miles along with Serge Ibaka at center could be pretty devastating offensively. So I think there'll be some matchups where they go to that. It's going to be very fluid, I think. Like I mentioned, they're going to take some time to start the season to figure out what exactly they want to do because there are so many new pieces. And Dwayne Casey, people kind of, you know, deride him a little bit for being, you know, uncreative or whatever you want to call it with his lineup choices. But the last couple of years, he has gotten a lot more experimental, and I think he's going to use the first couple of months of the season to kind of figure out what he wants his rotation to be. And like I said, there's going to be a lot of different looks they throw out there. I think most of them won't involve Jonas Valanciunas at center, but I'm very curious to see how that works out because, again, that's one of the bigger questions I have coming into the season.
Yeah, because we just don't know what Casey's going to do with Valanciunas. I said he played him so little once Ibaka arrived, and Valanciunas was still productive in that time, but he was playing like 20 minutes a game. So it's hard to know exactly what he's going to do. Do you think we're going to see more of first half Valanciunas in terms of minutes, given those losses in the front court, or do you think that the ascension of Poeltl and perhaps Siakam is just going to keep him as that 20, 21 minute a game sort of a player for this season?
Yeah, I would probably lean closer to the latter. It's hard to say, really, because it kind of fluctuates whether or not Valanciunas is being useful or not. It depends on the team he's playing. Like, there are certain teams where he just seems to really dominate. Other teams, he just can't be on the floor. So I think, again, that's going to fluctuate from game to game. But I think overall, probably towards the latter. I think Ibaka is going to eat a lot of minutes at center. I think Poeltl's going to, you know, he definitely deserves more minutes there as well. And if Bebe factors in at all, that's going to eat into Jonas's minutes as well. I think the big question I have for Jonas, and like I think I'm pretty sure he's going to end up being the starter unless Poeltl supplants him at some point, and maybe by the end of the season that happens. But I'm curious to see if they're going to use him as like a second unit, sort of classic, you know, the new wave six man, I suppose, with the big man
and his Kanter.
Enes Kanter, Al Jefferson, or what the Pacers hoped Al Jefferson would do before he was completely terrible. But, you know, we saw last year in the playoffs against Cleveland, there was the series, or I think it was, might have been game three or four, I can't remember exactly, but Valanciunas came off the bench and he scored like 23 points, and it didn't really, wasn't all that effectual for the Raptors because they were just trading twos for threes at that point and the Cavs were happy to do it. But it was kind of a blueprint for how you can use Valanciunas if you don't want to start him. I just kind of think with the lack of experience, they're probably just going to go with what works. And also, you can't just play Ibaka as much as you'd like to play Ibaka at five, you know, 30 minutes a game. I think you could wear a guy out pretty quickly that way. And just, you can't not play Valanciunas. You're paying him $17 million, and he does have some utility, and he can be useful in certain situations. So I don't think we're going to see him lose his starter's job right away. I think, like I said, he's not going to close many games, aside from very specific matchups. There's like three or four teams you can pick out that you know he's probably going to close against, like the Clippers, the Pistons, and sometimes the Celtics. Like, those teams he's usually pretty good against. Everyone else kind of finds a way to run him off the floor. So I would expect JV around 20 minutes or so. Maybe something like, I mean, his sort of statistical output has kind of been the same every year of his career, and I wouldn't expect anything different than that, really. Maybe if he gets moved to the second unit at some point, he becomes more of a scorer, but I will believe that when I see it, because I don't think they're going to make that change, at least not just yet.
I've always said it, if Valanciunas would play 30 minutes a night, he's a top 50 fantasy guy, but he's just not getting to 30 minutes a night. He's currently being drafted at pick 66 in Yahoo and 70 in ESPN. It's just way too high. He's just not going to get those 28 minutes that he would need to actually get to that level, and that's just a complete waste of a pick at that situation, unless you think that Casey's going to reverse course from what he's done the past four seasons and play Valanciunas more minutes than he ever has. Then I can't see why you would ever take him at that position. So he's going to be a guy that you can take late, and he can have these decent games, and he can be productive. But with the way that Casey runs things, it's just not going to be the case on a regular enough basis to justify picking him at that position. I just don't see it with Valanciunas, and I like him. I've been a Valanciunas supporter for a long time, and I'll happily say, like, if he gets those minutes, then the numbers are going to be there. He just isn't going to get those minutes, and that's the double-pronged thing, I guess, with looking at fantasy. It's like, can the guy do it? And will he get the opportunity to do it? And if both of those things don't align, then it's not happening. And that's pretty much where we're at with Valanciunas, I think, for this coming season. With Ibaka, go ahead.
Sorry. No, his defense is kind of the limiting factor to his minutes, right? Like, if he can figure out how to, you know, successfully guard a pick and roll, he'll get minutes, but I don't see that in his future because it's been 6 years of us trying to sort of predict if he's going to become a better defender and be the guy that you thought he was going to be coming out, and he just hasn't done that, and I don't think we're going to see that this year.
Ibaka's a guy that people often go, oh, I remember he used to be a top 20 guy. Maybe we go back to that. He's getting picked around pick 50, and that's about right for him. But one thing we've seen with him is his block numbers just continually decrease. The last four seasons, he's gone from 2.7 to 2.4 to 1.9 to 1.6. And then after the All-Star break, when he was in Toronto, he was at 1.4. So that athleticism, and this happens with blocks all the time. You'll see the guys have high block numbers early in their career, and they continually come down as they lose athleticism and as they also become smarter defenders, and they're not chasing blocks and they're not getting astronomically high foul rates. So the block numbers come down. So to expect Ibaka to come back to being a 1.5, 3, 2.5 block guy, it's just not going to happen. Expect the blocks to stay where they are or come down a bit. And what we saw from him last season is pretty much what we should be expecting from him again this season during his time in Toronto, I think, which is, you know, 14 points, 6 to 7 rebounds, 1.5 threes, 1.5 blocks, okay percentages, good free throws, all that sort of stuff is what we should expect. I don't think you should be looking at a big rise for him, and he is that guy that goes around pick 50 in drafts, which is totally fine in that sort of an area. Now I want to get onto the backup point guard role, because I've been a big DeLon Wright supporter for a while. I'm glad you're on board here, because obviously last year he started the season slowly with that shoulder issue, but he came in, didn't actually play much backup point guard. I was playing a bit at the 2, bit at the 3, and I thought he looked really good. Now Corey Joseph's gone. Obviously that was in order to get CJ Miles, but it's also, I think, part in they just went, all right, well, we want DeLon to become this guy, and we're confident that he can become this backup point guard. I think he'll also play some minutes next to Kyle Lowry, because he can play off the ball as well, and he's got size, he can play defensively. What do you like about DeLon, considering you're obviously in the DeLon Wright camp with me?
Yeah, I like pretty much everything aside from his shooting, which I guess we can get to. But his, you know, I feel like he has more defensive potential than most point guards in the league. I mean, he's like 6'5". He's super long. My favorite thing, I think, of last season were DeLon Wright blocks, because they kind of come out of nowhere, but they are just awesome when they happen, because he sneaks up on guys, and with his length and with the length of his arms, like it's really fun to watch, and I feel like that's something he can kind of add to his repertoire a little bit as he becomes more of a relied upon defender. I think it's a good thing that you mentioned that he's going to play a lot of two as well, because Corey Joseph, you remember, played a ton of two next to Kyle Lowry. Those bench units with Lowry and Joseph were absolutely dominant, and I think Wright could just be kind of a better version of Corey Joseph, because, you know, Corey Joseph was really good for the role that he had, and I'm going to miss him just having him around the team. But I think DeLon kind of offers some playmaking that Corey Joseph didn't have. Corey Joseph reminded me a lot of Norm Powell in that when he would go to the basket, he was going to score and not really try to kick out and keep the offense moving. Whereas DeLon is kind of the inverse, where he is almost scared when he goes around the basket, which is an issue unto itself, but His drive and kick game is right on par with Kyle Lowry in terms of being the best on the team already, and I think that's going to be really nice. I think he's going to rack up some assists that way, especially if Lowry's playing off ball from him. I feel like there's going to be a lot of Lowry threes that are created by DeLon Wright, which I'm very excited for. Just overall, I think his offensive game needs some work for sure. Like I said, he doesn't really have much of a shot, and he's kind of apprehensive around the basket, which are, you know, kind of important, but everything other than his sort of shooting game, I really, really like. I think he's going to rack up steals. He had one steal a game last year in 16.5 minutes. I mean, I think that's pretty impressive. And I think he's got a lot of room to grow there as well as he becomes more of a relied upon guy. I mean, he only played 27 games last year, didn't start any. I feel like he's going to get a lot more run this year. If the Raptors are smart, they're going to rest Kyle Lowry as much as they can, and DeLon's going to play a bunch. I'm very high on DeLon Wright. The shot needs to come around for sure. And I'm, you know, skeptical as to whether or not it will, because it's kind of a long release. But, you know, I'm not a shot doctor. The Raptors seem to think they can coach guys up to shoot. They've sort of turned Norman Powell into a pseudo good shooter, as we've talked about. Maybe they can do with DeLon Wright as well. And even if it doesn't work out, I still think he's going to be kind of on par with Corey Joseph, and potentially even better than Corey Joseph was as the Raptors' backup.
I think he's going to be better than Corey Joseph. I really believe in him. When he was in the draft, I wanted the Bulls to take him at that pick 19 or 20 when they picked Bobby Portis. So I was a little bit pissed that he ended up going to the Raptors there.
Funny. I was mad that the Raptors didn't take Portis in that draft. So it's funny how things work out.
Exactly. But Wright's ability to get those steals, that's super valuable, and add the assist. And when Lowry goes down, because it feels like it's almost a guarantee at some point Lowry is going to miss games this season. It's just what he does. Once the All-Star break hits, that's it. Kyle Lowry's done, and we'll see him in the playoffs. DeLon Wright is going to be a valuable player, and in those times when he starts and gets 30 minutes, he is going to be pretty close to a top 100 player in that time frame. If you're in a 16-team league, he should be drafted as is, because if he gets the 27 minutes that Joseph gets, then he is pushing the top 150. He's a much better statistical producer than what Joseph was. So if they're getting the same minutes, He's going to outperform him. So if you're in 16-team leagues, Wright should be drafted as it is. In 12-team leagues, he's a guy you watch, and when Lowry goes down, you add him because those steals and assist numbers, yeah, the threes won't be high. You'll score maybe 10 points in 30 minutes. It's not much, but he could get six assists. He could get two 2.1 steals, and that is ridiculously valuable. Yeah, decent enough free throw shooter. The field goal percentage, while he's not a good shooter, it's not horrendous. We're not talking Marcus Smart here. We're talking, you know, mid to low 40s, or, you know, closer to mid 40s in field goal percentage. He is definitely a name to watch, and if he does go, you know, full on into that Joseph role, he could actually have 12-team league value even as a backup. So I'm super excited to see what D'Lon can do this season. That takes me into Lowry, because we have seen over the past 3 years maybe that once we hit February, something goes wrong. He either gets hurt or the shot falls off, or he just falls apart. And I don't know what it is. Has he ever given any explanation as to why these injuries, because they're not related, they're back issues, they're wrist issues, their knee, whatever, they're not related injuries, but it just consistently happens. And do you think it's the fact that Dwayne Casey was playing him 37 minutes a night when there was actually, you know, no need to for a lot of that time at the start of the season, and it's just the wear and tear on a 30-plus-year-old body that just caused it to break down after 4 months of pounding himself for that long?
Yeah, I mean, the injury stuff with Lowry is so – it's frustrating to talk about as someone who follows the team and covers the team, and you sort of hear the national discourse, and it kind of just comes to, oh, Kyle Lowry can't play in the playoffs. But it's usually just that he's hurt come playoffs. Yeah. And it's not even that he has, like, a chronic thing, like you said. It's just kind of freak stuff. In 2014-15, that disastrous season that Raptors fans like to forget because they got swept in the first round by the Wizards, Lowry was playing at an enormously, like, a ridiculous level to start the season. And then DeMar DeRozan got hurt, and Lowry had to carry it on, and the Raptors kept winning without DeRozan in the lineup. But by the time DeRozan came back, Lowry had been playing something like, I don't know, 40, 41 minutes a game, and was just carrying all of the offensive load. And by the time DeRozan got back, Lowry was just done. He was broken down, and that kind of bled into the playoffs, and that season was lost. The following season, he had the weird elbow thing where he, like, fell in a game against Orlando in January, and he, like, messed up his elbow. He had got bursitis in there, had little bone chips, I guess. I'm not a doctor. I don't know what was going on, but there were times where it was pretty swelled up. And, yeah, that kind of bled into his playoff performance as well, although people kind of like to gloss over the fact that in the Game 7s the Raptors played in those playoffs, Lowry was fantastic. He had some enormous performances against both Indiana and Miami, and that was actually really good in the Cavs series as well, in the games where the Raptors won. The games where they lost was a different story, but the entire team was bad in those games. And then last year, it was the wrist thing, and that was another sort of random thing where... Weird. There was never really a time where he hurt himself. Like the last game before the All-Star break, he led like an enormous fourth quarter comeback against the Hornets with like a weird lineup where DeLon Wright was playing small forward. That was amazing. And after that game, nothing seemed wrong. And then by the time the three-point competition came around, his wrist hurt and he was wearing the bandage during the All-Star game. And it was kind of bizarre. And I'm from... what I've heard, and from all accounts, he did it while he was sleeping. Like, he just slept on it weird, and he screwed up his wrist. And there goes, you know, Kyle Lowry's season, essentially. He kind of regained it a little bit in the Cavs series, but then he got hurt with the ankle. And that was a freak play as well. So, the minutes are an issue for sure. But at the same time, the Raptors don't win games when Kyle Lowry's not playing a bunch of minutes. So, like last year, for example, I think was a year where the Raptors needed to play Kyle Lowry because there was a lot of pressure on that season. They were gunning for seeding. It was a really important year. Lowry was a free agent. I think this season might be the time. If there's ever a season where the Raptors are going to figure out that Kyle Lowry can't play 37 minutes a game, that he should probably be around 33, 34, I think it's going to be this year because, you know, there's no pressure really on the Raptors. No one's expecting them to be better than Boston or Cleveland. People are kind of expecting a regression. There's no major free agent at the end of the season. They're locked into a three-year window here, and they have a lot invested in developing their young guys. So I do think there's going to be a bit of a reprieve for Lowry's minutes this season, whether it's 2 minutes per game, 3 minutes per game, 6 minutes per game. I don't know, but I do think it's coming, and I do think that'll help. But even then, I'm just not sure, because the injuries that he's had, I don't think have really been tied to his load, aside from that season where DeRozan got hurt, where it was absolutely necessary that he took it on. The other two seasons, they were kind of freak things, and they were unfortunately timed, and that sort of, you know, colors people's impression of him. But I don't know. I wouldn't expect him to, like, none of these injuries are something that you can kind of predict. They just kind of happen, and then things go to hell. But no, I think if any year is going to be good for Lowry to get minutes taken off of his totals, I think it's going to be this year, because it's a very pressure-free environment for the Raptors, at least for 1 year.
I've got him projected at 1.5 minutes less per game, down from 37.5 down to 36. But the people drafting on Yahoo and ESPN are actually looking at a little bit more of a hit. Like, he's going at 24 on Yahoo and 29 on ESPN. He was the 15th ranked player last year. So while I do expect the minutes to drop, and he's 31, so there's a level of age-related decline there as well, I don't see him necessarily. 29's a bargain to take a guy like Kyle Lowry. So if you're in ESPN leagues, like, that's fantastic to grab him there. I think he's probably a guy that, yeah, between 19 and 22 is the right range to look at drafting him. If you want to go, you know, a little bit higher, then that's fine. But I would expect a level of drop-off in his game, but not to the extent that ESPN is sort of predicting, or the ESPN drafters are predicting with that sort of an average draft position. One guy we have touched on already, Shawnee, is Bruno Caboclo. We all know the 2 years away from being 2 years away standard line about him. He did, before he got kicked off the Brazilian team, he did have some decent performances there. And with the loss of Carroll, the loss of Tucker, the loss of Patterson, these guys, you know, three players playing the three and playing the four, is there a chance that Bruno moves into the regular rotation, or is he still going to be that guy that, you know, is playing for Raptors 905 and comes up occasionally and maybe sees 20 games of action this season?
This is another thing I can't really get a handle on. I keep flipping back and forth. You know, I do think that if he's going to get that opportunity, it's going to come in the start of the year before OG comes back, because there is going to be a hole there at power forward and the backup three as well. And maybe there's a chance he can get in there for some non-garbage time minutes, because that's literally all he's ever played. He's only played garbage time in the NBA. And there's some incentive for the Raptors to see what they have in him this year, too. And in a year where they're going to be, you know, putting a lot in their young guys, it only makes sense that they'll try to get Bruno at least some run in minutes to matter, because, like, wins aren't as important this season. This is a team that can afford to probably win 45-ish games. Last year, they tried really hard after Lowry got hurt to beef up their seeding and get into the range where they could avoid Cleveland, and it backfired on them anyway. So I think this season they're not really going to worry about seeding as much, at least I hope they don't, and I think that's going to lead to guys like Bruno and guys like Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam getting more minutes, and I'm totally okay with that. But Bruno, you know, it's really kind of weird with him, because I think his defense it's already like NBA level defense, I think, like, at least on ball. I'm not sure if he has the nuance of playing team defense down just yet, but on ball, he's a menace. Like, he can poke balls free that very few guys can, just with his long arms, and he seems to have that figured out. But yeah, it's kind of a work in progress for him offensively. He shot, I think, 33% from three last season in the D-League, and, you know, that's something you hope he can improve on. He's kind of been at the same level every single year, so you're wondering if there's stagnation there or whatever, but it's hard to forget that he's still only 21. I think he's, like, the 19th youngest player in the NBA at this point, or that's something crazy. Along those lines. And that's, like, he's in his third year. So while people want to give up on him, I don't think that's entirely fair, because I think you could look at him this season. You know, that's what I'm kind of doing, is this season I'm kind of looking at as his rookie year. And I'm curious to see what they're going to do. And, it's the last year before he's up for a new contract. And this is going to be a big year for him. He's got some incentive to, you know, play reasonably well and show that he's an NBA player worthy of a second contract. And the Raptors want to see if this experiment's going to work for them. So I would not be shocked at all if he got some minutes earlier in the year. If he doesn't do anything with those minutes, that could really sort of spell the end, I think, of his time in Toronto, because come January, OG Anunoby is going to be ready and available in all likelihood. And I think he's probably got the inside track to whatever job Bruno's chasing. And if Bruno shows that he's still the guy who's too green to really be in the NBA, then, yeah, that could be sort of big trouble for him. But I think there's a small chance at least that he'll get at least some sort of run, whether it's 5-10 minutes a game in experimental sort of lineups earlier in the year. But, yeah, it's really hard to say right now, because I'm not even sure where the Raptors really are on him. It's hard to say, and it's kind of, you know, you'd wish he'd be further along for sure, but it is what it is. And I think the Raptors are at least going to want to see what they have in him this season for sure.
Yeah, so he's and you know, those defensive numbers, as I said earlier with Anunoby, like if you can get those steals and blocks, which Bruno can get, they can be useful. But obviously there's a lot of his game that needs to come around, and we're talking really deep dynasty leagues to be paying too much attention to Bruno. But the opportunity is there to start the season, and if he is in his fourth season, but if he takes that fourth season leap with that opportunity, with no Tucker, with no Carroll, with no Anunoby to start the season, with, you know, Powell and Miles not cemented into, you know, huge roles at this point, anything can happen. Yeah, Bruno can start to sneak some minutes. So he's a guy to watch, but really it's just watching at this point. one play.
If you're gonna watch anything, if you're gonna watch any Bruno, just watch the highlight clip from the final game of the D League Finals last year, where he scored 31 points. It was that'll give you some hope for sure.
Well, there you go. There's something to go and check out. Now, one guy we haven't touched on is DeMar DeRozan, who scored 27 points a game for this team. Was an All Star. Was fantastic. His efficiency go up. He shot an extra 20% from the field. True shooting 55. He was absolutely fantastic for this team. He was the 44th ranked player last season, but for some reason, the punters on Yahoo and ESPN think that he's going to be significantly better this year. They're drafting him at pick 30 on Yahoo and 28 on ESPN, which I just cannot see the rationale behind why DeMar DeRozan is going to get so significantly better this season. Can you make any argument as to where DeRozan is going to get better and how he is going to do more than what he did in a fantastic career season for him last year?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with DeRozan is he improves every single year, and it sounds like it's a cliche, but at this point we're what 7 or 8 years into his career, and he literally has improved in some way every single year. I mean, even when the Raptors first got good back in 2013-14, he was still a guy that I think most people were kind of out on and didn't really want to see him be part of the team going forward. But you know, in the intervening years, he has added some playmaking to his game. He's become probably the best mid-range shooter, at least tough mid-range shooter in the NBA. Like, other guys might have higher percentages, but the shots that he hits are just absurdly difficult most of the time, and he's really good at making them. And yeah, I think if there's any improvement coming for him, it's probably going to be in the three-point area. I think Kevin O'Connor just wrote for The Ringer this week, actually, about DeMar and his sort of quest to improve from three-point range. And it's been like 5 years that we've been saying, hey, maybe DeMar figures out how to shoot threes maybe this year. And it may never come, but we never would have thought that DeMar was going to average 27-5 and 4 last year on the career high true shooting percentage that he did. And he did that, and he did it all season long. We thought maybe the first 10 games of the year where he scored over 30 points 9 times was going to be an aberration, but he kept it up. And when Lowry was out, he just thrived even more. So I'm past the point of ruling out anything with DeRozan, and I'm going to wait to see if it happens first. It makes sense that he would become a three-point shooter, at least from the corners. He was pretty reasonable in 2015-16. I think he shot like 34% from three, was about 40% from the corners on a pretty low volume, but still better than he'd ever shown. And last year, he really sort of dropped off again. And I'm not sure exactly where that drop-off came from. It might have just been that he had the ball in his hands more often and wasn't in the position to catch those spot-up opportunities. But if it's going to come, like, it makes sense that it would, because he's so good from the mid-range. You would think maybe just taking a step out, that shouldn't be a problem for him. But it has been in the past, and I don't know. They're kind of different. It's hard to say. Like, if he adds a corner three, like, maybe that adds, like, one or two threes to his game per game, and, like, that's a marginal upgrade, I suppose. And I think that's the most likely way we're going to see it, because I don't see him being a pull-up three-point shooter. I don't see him really coming off screens and hitting threes like J.J. Redick. Like, I don't see that happening. So I think it's going to come from the corners, and that'll be a small improvement for sure. I'm not sure there's going to be a massive improvement across the board in any other, you know, area. I'm not sure he's going to become, like, a big steals guy or anything like that. But yeah, even if DeRozan stays what he was last year, that's very good for the Raptors. Maybe it's not as good for fantasy, but he was the Raptors MVP last season for sure, and kept the Raptors afloat when Kyle Lowry was out. And you know, even if he doesn't improve, he's still a pretty damn good player.
Yeah, exactly. And people, I use this example a lot with DeMar DeRozan. People are like, oh, I'm not drafting DeMar DeRozan in fantasy because he's my shooting guard. He doesn't hit threes. And I say, well, that's great. Good on you. But who else is giving you 25, 5, and 4 with a steal and getting to the line 10 times a game and hitting 85%? The answer is absolutely nobody. So
yeah,
the value is always there. My issue here is that I'm just not picking him at pick 28 because it's requiring a significant jump on what he did last year. And while he might improve slightly, a significant jump, when that's talking about a really, really, you know, big leap forward, it seems unlikely. So if he's there at 39, if he's there at 45, then I'm all over it. That's a great pick. But at 28, there's no way that I expect him to be taking a step forward of that magnitude. Like, he's not going to come in and average 37-6, which, you know, is pretty much where he would need to be to be getting 28, the value of pick 28. And it's just not going to happen. So when I say, oh, I hated it, that pick, I love DeRozan. I've been on DeRozan. I own him in fantasy all the time because I don't care that he doesn't shoot threes because he does all this other stuff. But when the value goes from a guy that was, you know, being drafted at 72 years ago to being drafted at 28, when overall his fantasy value has stayed basically the same, look, that's a huge, huge difference. And that changes my perception of whether he's going to be on my teams or not. And at that spot, he just isn't going to be. It's just way too high for me to be taking that when I just don't see the upside of him actually improving, you know, 20 spots in ranking. It just doesn't seem like a realistic possibility for him to be able to do that. I reckon we've covered everyone on this team, unless you've got some real huge insight on Fred VanVleet that you want to share with us.
No, just one more thing on DeRozan, actually. You know, I think there's a chance that maybe his points per game production kind of drops a little bit just because
there's
going to be more mouths to feed with Powell out there and with Miles, you know, not being Damari Carroll and actually being a reliable guy you can throw the ball to. And I think Ibaka showed last year that he's, you know, pretty shot happy. And I don't think he's going to sort of pull back the trigger just because, you know, Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan are both out there with him. I think he's going to be pretty happy to be a pick and pop threat and pull up for those threes. So yeah, DeRozan might see a bit of a drop in his overall, you know, scoring numbers, but again, I think he's going to be pretty much the same sort of effectiveness for the Raptors. And yeah, other than that, I mean, if Kyle Lowry goes down, VanVleet's interesting because he might be the best shooter on the team at this point, even better than Lowry. I think he was something like 44% in the D-League last year, and that's off the top of my head, that might be wrong, but he was really good. And, you know, he's shown that he's at least a competent backup. And I think him and DeLon Wright could work well together in two-guard lineups if the worst happens and Kyle Lowry's out. But that's not something to be really all that concerned about if Lowry's healthy. And that's kind of what we're hoping for over here for sure.
Yeah, look, VanVleet, I remember him heading into Summer League said that his aim was to be the MVP of Summer League. He didn't quite achieve that, but he was still pretty good. And he did show that, yeah, he can definitely stick on an NBA roster. I don't think many people would have too many concerns about him being able to do that, which is obviously great for him and gives the Raptors just a solid third string point guard. That's the word I'm looking for, to it to be that solid third string point guard, and that's exactly where he is at the moment. Now, Sean, let's get your breakout candidate on this team. You can phrase that however you want. You can use whatever definition you want for breakout candidate. But who is it? Who's your guy? And there's quite a few options on this team, I think.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's probably DeLon Wright. If he's going to play, you know, 25 to 27 minutes a game, I think, you know, he very well could average like 11 points with, you know, four and a half assists. You know, that would be pretty nice. It'd be a little bit better than what Corey Joseph provided. I think he's a better per minute kind of production type player than Corey Joseph. And I think his defense is really going to, you know, Joseph's defense really dropped off last season and they really missed that in a lot of games. I think Wright's going to kind of provide what Joseph did a couple seasons ago as a lockdown defender at the point guard spot, or really both backcourt spots, really. So I think DeLon's going to, he seems like a guy who's going to earn a lot of rope from Dwayne Casey as well. He seems to do a lot of things that Dwayne Casey likes. So yeah, I think DeLon would be my guy. And if Lowry gets hurt at all, I think DeLon could really flourish for sure.
Yeah, I can say that. My other guy would be Norm Powell in that position as a breakout guy, but they do have those couple of options. You could even throw in Jakob Poeltl in there as a potential breakout guy, because there are these opportunities for these young guys who the Raptors really do value to take this big step forward. So there are quite a few guys to look at. In terms of value fantasy guys, I like Norm Powell, as I said, with that last pick. I think Lowry's got a little bit of value at the start of drafts. I've already talked about DeRozan being a little bit overvalued at that draft position, and Valanciunas significantly at pick 66. There's no way you want anything to do with him then. You can always chuck in a DeLon Wright in that deeper league late pick, who does have the potential to maybe crack the top 150 at some point just with his steal numbers. And CJ Miles' ability to hit those threes does render him useful, but it's more as a streaming type of situation. For some reason, Bebe is getting drafted at pick 137 on Yahoo. I have absolutely no idea why that will be the case. I think he struggles to crack the top 250 this year, and as we've said, he is not the backup center. He is the third string, probably at best, if they decide to run. Well, they're going to have Valanciunas, they'll have Ibaka, they'll have Poeltl, maybe they even run Siakam over Bebe as well. So I'm not really sure where he goes from there, and I don't understand why he possibly would be getting picked anywhere inside that top 150, but that's where we are with him. Now, you talked about a little bit earlier in terms of Kevin Pelton's win projections for the season. So what I do, Sean, with all the guests that come on, I get them to look at the Vegas over-unders and give us your prediction. So Vegas has the Raptors at 48.5, and as you mentioned, Pelton has them at 43.4. So he's going way under that Vegas line. Where are you going at 48.5?
That's like, I think it's perfectly placed, first of all. And I had Kevin on the show actually a couple weeks ago, and he said that, you know, this was before his projections came out, but he said just anecdotally that, you know, he wouldn't be surprised that the Raptors came first in the Eastern Conference. He thinks that, like, that's definitely sort of in play. And he acknowledged in his piece, you know, that a lot of the drop in wins was kind of, you know, based on Patrick Patterson and PJ Tucker leaving. And there's a very real chance that some of these young guys can make up for that production. I would probably, it's really hard. I would say probably over like 50 wins. Probably I would kind of go in there just because I think the East is bad enough that they're going to pick up wins against a lot of these really crappy teams, and they're going to sort of pad their record that way. How they perform against the top teams in the West, I'm not entirely sure. They've kind of historically struggled with some of those teams, although the last couple of years has been a little bit better. But I would say probably 50 and 32 would be my guess. But I think there's kind of a variation they could have there. It could be between 45 and 55 to me. If they want to gun it and they see maybe between Boston and Cleveland that there's some, you know, potential to strike and get the one seed to kind of set themselves up for a better playoff run where they can sort of more predetermine what the bracket's going to look like, then maybe they try to do that. If not, you know, I think developing some of these young guys could cost them some wins. They might finish 45 wins and they could finish, you know, fourth or fifth in the East. And I think they'd be okay with that. You know, it obviously depends on how the bracket breaks, but I think they've kind of they've got a lot of different potential avenues to go this season. And I think if like DeLon Wright, Norm Powell, Jakob Poeltl all really hit this year, that could really boost up their win total for sure. There's so much unknown. That's why I kind of have it in a wide range. But right now, I'd say slightly over.
I would say the same. I would go slightly over on that as well, around that 49 to 50 zone for me with the Raptors. Sean, I reckon that does us for the Raptors season preview podcast. Just let everyone know what you've got coming up on Locked On Raptors and anything else that you want to promote here on the show.
Yeah, I did a podcast today talking about my five locks for teams that are going to go under their Vegas projections, and I had Dan Grant from Raptors HQ on, and he took his five locks for teams that are going to go over, and we kind of debated that a little bit. And not really sure what I got coming up for the podcast next week, but stay tuned. You can follow me on Twitter at Woodley Sean. Raptors HQ, SB Nation's Raptors team site is where I do my writing. And yeah, that's pretty much where you can find me.
So go check out Sean at Raptors HQ, of course, on Twitter, and the Locked On Raptors podcast, which is part, like this podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Subscribe to both of our shows and give us ratings and reviews either on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, or Spotify. That would be much appreciated if you could do that. Sean, thank you for coming on and discussing the Toronto Raptors.
Thank you, Josh. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Serge Ibaka.
Progressive presents Mindflowness with Flo.
Before you lies a beautiful meadow. In that meadow, Progressive Direct has placed its auto insurance rates alongside those of competitors. You select the lowest rate and feel a great sense of calm. A great sense of...
Compare Progressive Direct rates with competitors' rates so you can rest easy. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.